ओम अज्ञान तिमिरांधस्य ज्ञानांजन शलाकय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्य मनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकम्। वन्देहं श्रीगुरुः श्रीयुतपदकमलं श्रीगुरुन् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादां सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च। नमो ओं विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामिनिति नामिने। नमस्ते सारस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशतारिणे। मुखं करोति वाचालं पंगुं लंघयते गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वंदे श्रीगुरुं दीनतारिणं। वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। नमो महावदान्याय कृष्णप्रेम प्रदायते कृष्णाय कृष्णचैतन्य नामने गौरत्विषे नमः। हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधो दीनबंधो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते। तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानो सुते देवी प्रणमामि हरि प्रिये। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। हरे कृष्णा। सो इन द फ्यू डेज लीडिंग अप टू राम नवमी वी आर हैविंग अ सीरीज ऑफ टॉक्स pertaining to Sri Ramachandra and his devotees. Every year, because the day of Ram Navami coincides with the day on which our deities here in Vrindavan, Sri Sri Krishna Balaram, Sri Sri Radha Shyam Sundar and Sri Sri Gaur Nithai were installed, and this is the day this temple was inaugurated. So usually much of the discussion pertains to the opening that took place. So this year, for a few days prior to the actual day of Ram Navami, we are having some kathas on Lord Ramachandra. Of course, in India, every child has heard stories of Lord Ram. Also of Lord Krishna. But somehow, Lord Ram's pastimes are also very, very popular all over. And not only in India, but in many, many other countries as well. It is surprising to us that in many countries in the southeast of Asia and even other places, one can find very strong remnants of some devotion to Lord Ram, even to this day. In Thailand, for example, the Ramayana is called Ramakien, and there is a whole native Ramayana that is adapted from the original Ramayana that came from the Valmiki Ramayana. And they all have, all the characters have names that have been adapted to that language. But the plot, the theme is more or less the same. There are some differences in the minor details and also some names, but more or less it is just exactly the Ramayana. There is a game called Thai boxing, somewhat like our martial arts. And they have various terms that indicate certain holds and certain ways to strike the opponent. And many of them deal with some names from the Ramayana. Hanuman hold, Hanuman this, Hanuman that. And this has been traditionally coming down in their culture for many, many years. Actually, till just a few years ago, in the last 200 years, there were 9 kings in Thailand by the name of Ram. The kings were called King Ram. Ram 1, Ram 2, and so on, up to Ram 9. And Bangkok, which is now the capital of Thailand, has become the capital only in the late 18th century. But before that, for 400 years, the capital was a place called Ayutthaya, which is a transformation of the word Ayodhya. So this culture was very, very strong there. Also in Burma, they have their language, they have their terms for the Ramayana. I don't remember those terms, they're all in different languages, very difficult to pronounce. So Burmese culture. Then in other countries like Laos, Cambodia, Indonesia, Malaysia. One devotee who came from Indonesia was explaining how there are still many, many places where you have ancient, ancient temples of Ram or Krishna and so on. But now because it is under Islamic rule, the government will not allow you to access those places. So the culture was there even till just recently. And even now they have not been able to erase the path of devotion to Lord Ram. And Ram has somehow permeated into their culture, into their arts, into their dance, drama, music, paintings. And what to speak of the Southeast Asian countries. Even in Africa, there are remnants of this, and various other places. I was reading one time that when one Indian sannyasi went to Ethiopia and he presented a copy of the Ramayana to the king of Ethiopia, at that time Haile Selassie, something like that, that was his name. And when he presented the Ramayana, he said, well, yes, this is not new to us. We are, after all, Kushites. It is called the Kushite Empire in Ethiopia and that part of Africa. And actually, if you correlate that to the Srimad Bhagavatam, we see that that part of the world was called Kushadvipa. Because after the reign of Lord Ramachandra, he divided the earth between his two sons, Lava and Kush. And Kush was given charge of the administration of that part of the world, including Africa. So from Kushadvipa, so they still call themselves as Kushites. So in this way, even those people who may not have been so much part of the Vedic culture in the present times, they have remnants of that, the traces of that are still existing. Somebody I knew who came from Iran was telling me that many of their terms and their rituals, they have the word Ram or something related to that. And many of the processes of yajna, the fire sacrifice in Iran, they worship the fire god. That's very much linked to our process of yajna. And the other day we had a devotee coming from Armenia. And we were talking about, of course, this little incident is not about Ram, it's about Krishna, but it gives an incident, it gives an understanding of how the Vedic culture was spread everywhere. He said that there is an ancient building or a structure, a monument, in one place in Armenia. Inside that monument there is nothing, it's empty. And that monument is called the Temple of the Little Blue Boy. But of course, they don't know who that little blue boy is. We know. But they do not know. So in this way, somehow or other, at some point in time, the deity of Gopal that must have been there was taken away. And he also mentioned another interesting point, the one French archaeologist or historian, when he came and he had written some book, and he explained that the original residents of Armenia were actually worshippers of Radha and Krishna. And he published a research paper on that. So this devotee showed it to the authorities who were persecuting them and said, see, this is our original culture. So you see, after Parshuram scattered the Kshatriyas, by defeating them, they went all over the different parts of the world. And they carried with them remnants of that culture. And gradually with time, because of separation from the mainland of Bharatvarsha, their culture degraded. So the point I'm trying to make is that since today we're talking about Ramayana, the culture of Lord Ramachandra and the discussions of his pastimes and his glories is age old, coming down from many, many years, and it is spread all over the globe. Actually, there is another thing I read which I may mention, but this I cannot quote from Shastra. But it seems very logical. They say that, you see, when Lord Ramachandra killed Tataka, we heard that in the Bhagavatam class, I believe, that was discussed briefly, the demoness Tataka, and her son was Marich, who eventually became the golden deer. So when he was shot by Lord Ramachandra, he was not killed. Tataka was killed and another demon was killed, but this demon was thrown 800 miles into the sea. And it is said that from Maricha came Mauritius, and from Mauritius comes Mauritius. And also it is Ravana's father-in-law was Mayasura, the father of Mandodari. And that is related to the Mayan culture in Central America, Central and South America. And it is said that there was some secret stairway that Ravana wanted to build to that part of the earth and also to the heavens. So in this way we find that everywhere this culture was there, somehow or other we have forgotten. It has got lost in course of time. The discussions on the Ramayana, the discussions on the pastimes of Lord Krishna and so on were happening everywhere in the world. Of course, the discussions on Lord Ram's pastimes are much older than Lord Krishna's pastimes as we know it now. Even when Krishna was present in Dwarka, there was Ramkatha going on. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in one purport, Srila Prabhupada explains that even at Parikshit Maharaj's time, there were varieties of Ramayana available. And there is this verse that was discussed in the Hindi class the other day by Radha Raman Maharaj, at the beginning of the ninth canto in the Bhagavatam, when the topic of Lord Ramachandra is introduced. Tasyanu charitam rajan rishibhistattvadarshibhihi shrutam hi varnitam bhuri tvaya sita pater muhuhu. Shukadev Goswami tells Parikshit Maharaj, Shrutam hi varnitam bhuri tvaya. You must have heard, you have heard very nice descriptions of the pastimes of Lord Ram, Sitapati, Muhuhu, again and again. And because from childhood you have been hearing these pastimes of Lord Ram in great detail, so now I will explain these to you only in brief. I'll just give you some outline. And therefore, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we do not find a very detailed description of the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra. It's only about 2 chapters. Just the outlines, it's just mentioned what Lord Ram did here, what he did here, and in 2 chapters it's wound up. We can remember that the Srimad Bhagavatam consists of 18,000 verses spread over so many chapters. And the Valmiki Ramayana has 24,000 verses. And all these are dedicated to the glorification of Lord Ramachandra. And interspersed with that, of course, there are many other stories from the Puranas and other historical accounts that have been woven into that. So we can imagine Shukadev Goswami deliberately did not speak in detail about this. And he said that because you have heard these, I am now telling you, just in brief, the concise descriptions. And Srila Prabhupada also explains here that this means that many, many editions or compositions of the Ramayana must have been existing at that time. And Srila Prabhupada warns us, he gives a word of caution, that many of such accounts, not just of Lord Ram's activities, but any of the Lord's incarnation's activities, there are many accounts that may not be bona fide or genuine. They may have been composed by people out of their own imagination. They may be concocted versions. They may be interpolations added here and there subsequently. But a genuine Shastra or a genuine scripture that purports to reveal the pastimes of the Lord must have been composed by those who have actually seen the truth, Tattva Darshis. Therefore, in the verse that I quoted, it is mentioned, Tasya Anucharitam Rajan Rishibhis Tattva Darshibhi. So this has been described, Shukadev Goswami says, by the great sages, the rishis, who are Tattva Darshis, who have seen the truth. So Srila Prabhupada comments that nobody can write a scripture glorifying the pastimes of the Lord unless he is a Tattvadarshi, unless he has realized the truth by practical understanding. As far as the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra are concerned, we find descriptions in many scriptures. In some of the Puranas also it is there, briefly here and there. In the Srimad Bhagavatam it is there in essence. But the most detailed version is to be found in the Valmiki Ramayana. Many, many times in his purports in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and often during some lectures, Srila Prabhupada has mentioned that Valmiki's Ramayana is the original Ramayana. It is the real authentic Ramayana. And all other Ramayans are essentially based upon this one Valmiki Ramayana. So we follow the Valmiki Ramayana. There may be other editions or other compositions of the Ramayana which may be popular or may not be popular amongst the people at large. But as far as authenticity is concerned, as far as authoritativeness is concerned, we believe only in the Valmiki Ramayana. Of course, the Lord accepts His glorification. The Lord accepts the bhava, the mood in which His devotees glorify Him. But nevertheless, for sadhakas who are seeking to understand the Supreme Lord and relish His pastimes, we are cautioned that we must approach only the authorized works. So Ramayana is not a fairy tale. It is not a mythological work, as is commonly believed in the world today, especially amongst the scholarly community. Often if you go to a bookshop, even in India, and if you go to the section on mythology, you will find the Puranas and the Ramayana and Mahabharata and so on. And if you read in any newspaper any mention of Ram or Krishna, they will invariably prefix the word mythological personality to indicate that actually these were not historical personalities, these were not historical events, and so on. But the fact of the matter is that these narrations, like the Ramayana composed by Valmiki or the Srimad Bhagavatam composed by Shukadev Goswami, are not imaginary tales born out of the fertile brains of some people sitting somewhere. They are the product of the deepest of realizations of the spiritual truth. They are the product of divine inspiration. They are the products of the absolute truth being revealed within the heart by the Lord or His agents. These are not ordinary works. And therefore we should accept that whatever narrations are here, they are true. Even great scholars get bewildered because they cannot reconcile the descriptions given in these scriptures to their sense perception. Radharaman Maharaj was also mentioning about Dr. Rajagopalachari, who was one time the Governor General of India. And it is a fact. I also remember as a young student in school, I read Rajagopalachari's Ramayana. It makes very good reading from a literary point of view. It is quite exciting. And if you don't know or not bothered about the tattva, then it's a wonderful reading. But when I came to Krishna consciousness and I had that book and I opened and I saw, and in the very preface or the introduction, he writes that we should know that even though the Ramayana is such a great epic and so on, and there are so many wonderful moral lessons we can learn from it, etc., but yet we must understand that Ram was a great human being. He was not God. He is a human being. He was great, but still he is a human. He is not God. So somehow even great scholars are bewildered by these narrations because they apply their mundane rational and analytical power to this. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna describes these people as Mayaya Paharita Jnana, one of the four categories of people who do not surrender to Him. Those whose minds and intelligence has been stolen by illusion. Where is the question of surrendering to Lord Ram if you have not accepted Him as a Supreme Personality of Godhead? So this is a tragedy of the modern time. And Srila Prabhupada took great pains to emphasize again and again whenever he was discussing the Bhagavad Gita or the Ramayana or anything related to the Lord, that the narrations of the Lord are factual descriptions. They are historical events that happened. And the reason I'm giving this background is it is a perspective or a background in which we can actually properly understand and relish the pastimes. We cannot understand the pastimes as they are without understanding the tattva or the truth, the reality, the philosophical foundation. So therefore, those who are honest devotees of the Lord, sincerely seeking the absolute truth, they accept the Ramayana as composed by Valmiki or as narrated in other bona fide scriptures as being historical and actual events. So who exactly is Lord Ram? In the Brahma Samhita also, Brahmaji has explained, Achyutam Anadim Ananta Rupam Adyam Purana Purusham Navayauvanam Cha. So the Lord has many, many forms, Ananta Rupam. In the same Brahma Samhita elsewhere, Brahmaji says, Ramadi Murtishu Kala Niyamena Tishthan Nanavataram Akarod Bhuvaneshu Kintu Krishna Swayam Samabhavat Paramahapumanyo Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. The Supreme Lord Sri Govinda, at whose lotus feet I offer my respectful obeisances, not only appears as Krishna himself, Krishna Swayam Samabhavat, Purushah, but he also appears in various other incarnations, Nana Avataram Akarod, Bhuvaneshu, on this earth planet. And what are those incarnations? Ram Adi Murtishu. Ram, etc. Ram, Vamana, Narasingha, and so on. Kala Niyamena Tishthan. And Brahmaji says that Ram and the other incarnations are Kala Niyamena, which means they are plenary portions of that Supreme Lord Sri Govinda or Sri Krishna. Even in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 9th chapter, Shukadev Goswami uses the word Ansha Anshena to describe Sri Ramachandra and his three divine brothers, Bharat, Lakshman, Shatrughna. Ansha Anshena implies that Lord Ram is an Ansha, or he is a plenary portion of the Lord, of Krishna. And the three brothers are portions of the portions of the Lord. In the Valmiki Ramayana, because today we are talking about the understanding given from the Ramayana, there is an interesting understanding of Ram Tattva. It is explained that Lord Ramachandra is half representing Lord Vishnu. Lakshman is one quarter representing Vishnu. And Bharat and Shatrughna are one sixth representing Vishnu each. So they are not full 100% original Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is Krishna alone, but they are expansions of that Supreme Personality, Shri Krishna. I wish to read now a purport from the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And this is very illuminating, so we understand really what Ram Tattva is. It's a very nice purport by Srila Prabhupada. I will skip the Sanskrit verses because there are three verses that will take up some time, but I will read the translation of these verses at the proper time. This is from 5th Canto, Chapter 19, describing the prayers that are offered by the residents of Kim Purusha Varsha, where Hanuman stays, and Arishta Sena also. And naturally Hanuman will glorify Lord Ramachandra. So in this verse it is described that Hanuman and others are constantly chanting the glories of Lord Ram. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada explains as follows. Quote, in the Puranas, there are two different opinions concerning Lord Ramachandra. In the Laghu Bhagavatamrit 5:34-36, this is confirmed in the description of the incarnation of Manu. And then the verses are quoted, and now I quote the translation. The Vishnu Dharmottara describes that Lord Ramachandra and his brothers, Lakshman, Bharat and Shatrughna, are incarnations of Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna and Aniruddha, respectively. The Padma Purana, however, says that Lord Ramachandra is an incarnation of Narayan, and that the other three brothers are incarnations of Shesha, Chakra and Shankha. Therefore, Srila Baladev Vidya Bhushan has concluded, Tad idam kalpa bhede naiva sambhavyam. In other words, these opinions are not contradictory. In some millenniums, Lord Ramachandra and his brothers appear as incarnations of Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna and Aniruddha. And in other millenniums, they appear as incarnations of Narayana, Shesha, Chakra and Shankha. Very illuminating point. The residence of Lord Ramachandra on this planet is Ayodhya. So in this way, Srila Prabhupada makes a very important statement here, on Rama Tattva. So Ram is Vasudev, Lakshman is Sankarshan, Bharat is Pradyumna, and Shatrughna is Aniruddha. So in this way, these four personalities, these four brothers who have advented into this material world, are all Vishnu Tattva. Regardless of the technical difference of whether sometimes they are this or that, but they are all Vishnu Tattva, and they are worshipable as the personalities of Godhead. Srila Prabhupada explains in one purport, again in the Srimad Bhagavatam elsewhere, that the narrations in the Ramayana may appear to be very pitiable and full of pain and distress. From one point of view, it's a fact. What do you have in the Ramayana? Right from the beginning, you have the heart-rending episode of injustice being done against Lord Ramachandra. The evil-minded Kaikeyi schemes and plots to have her own son Bharat installed on the throne, and Lord Ram to be exiled into the forest. And then you have another painful episode of him actually going out into exile, and all the citizens of Ayodhya completely breaking down in distress. And shortly after that, Dashrath Maharaj departs from this world, unable to bear the grief of separation from his beloved son, Sri Ram. And then there are descriptions of the trials and tribulations that Lord Ram and Sita, Devi and Lakshman also underwent in the forest. The residents of Ayodhya were unable to bear the fact that Ram was going. And in addition, what made it even more unbearable was that Sita Devi, who was so delicate and who had always lived in opulence in a palace and had never known difficulties and austerities in life, that she was also accompanying Lord Ram. She was wearing deer skin. She had also tied her hair like the yogis do. She was also going bare feet. She would also have to sleep on the floor and eat roots and berries in the forest. And when living in the forest, they had to encounter so many cannibals, rakshasas, and so many difficulties against the elements, the heat, the cold, and so on. And then after that, Sita Devi was kidnapped. And that was so painful for Lord Ram. And then somehow or other, Lord Ram, with the cooperation of the armies of Sugriva, they captured Ravana and killed him. The armies were defeated and Lord Ram came back victorious. But then again, Sita had to be sent out, banished into the forest. So the whole of the Ramayana appears to be just stories that bring pain to the heart. So how is it that this is some kind of devotional scripture? What is it? What exactly is this? So Srila Prabhupada said, if it was just a mundane book of distressful and painful stories, then why would the great devotee of Lord Ramachandra, Hanuman, read, recite and contemplate on the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra as described in the Ramayana every day? Only to get more pain? No. Because he experiences transcendental bliss. Srila Prabhupada explains how we should view these particular pastimes that take place in the Ramayana, which apparently are full of distress. Even in Krishna Leela we see there is apparently distress. There is nothing more heart-rending in this world than hearing about the descriptions of the Brajabasis and their grief when Krishna leaves Vrindavan for Mathura. So all this so-called grief and distress on the spiritual platform is experienced in a way that is peculiarly ununderstandable to the uninitiated into the tattva of devotion. It actually is a manifestation of some very great spiritual bliss. These are all pastimes enacted by the Supreme Lord out of His own sweet will. And the devotees of the Lord are somehow involved in one or the other way, either as participants in that pastime or as those who participate by reading or hearing or remembering these pastimes. So therefore, these are all transcendental activities. And if one remains absorbed in such pastimes, whether of Lord Ram, Lord Krishna and the other incarnations, gradually one will become purified in heart and will also experience that same spiritual ecstasy. So we are reading and hearing and thinking about the pastimes of the Lord, like in the Valmiki Ramayana, for example, for the sake of purifying our hearts, for the sake of developing attraction for the messages and pastimes of the Lord, so that eventually we will develop pure love for the Lord. That is why we study and hear about these topics. There are many people in India who study and read, recite Ramayana regularly, like they do the Srimad Bhagavatam, for some material purpose. For example, it is said that if you want a son, you should recite the Balakanda, the first portion of the Valmiki Ramayana. If you want wealth, you recite another portion. If you want to recover a lost property or a lost kingdom, you read another section. So this is nothing but karma kanda. So genuine devotees of the Lord do not approach the Ramayana with any such fruitive motive. Genuine devotees approach it only for the sake of serving the Lord in a mood of devotion by hearing about Him and His activities and messages. So Ramayana has been composed very nicely by Valmiki Muni in a most beautiful composition. And before we actually commence on the Valmiki Ramayana proper, we need to speak something about the author. Because if you understand the author properly, then you can understand his work nicely. What kind of person is writing the book? That's very important to know. For example, if someone tells you, "I have a very nice book here, would you like to read it?" What's the first thing you will ask? Who has written it? Isn't it? And you want to know something about the author, if you want to know that it's worthwhile to read that book. So some information about the author is usually given in the back of the book, so that you can make your decision whether to read this book or not. So similarly for us, before we embark on a discussion on the Valmiki Ramayana proper, we need to know a little something about that great soul who composed this great epic. Earlier, he was known as Ratnakar. And somehow or other, he was not treading the path of virtue. Rather, he had accepted the life of a dacoit. And he would assault and waylay travelers as they passed through the forest. And one time, as he was laying in wait for another victim, the great devotee saint Narad Muni happened to walk by. And immediately, sensing that a new victim was coming, Ratnakar approached him, but then he realized that this is a sadhu and he has nothing with him, no assets that he could steal. So then Narad Muni started preaching to him. Narad Muni, of course, is the tireless preacher of Krishna consciousness, always taking every opportunity to preach to whoever it may be. So he explained, "My dear friend, do you not know the consequences of your actions? you are committing great sin. And the result of sin is that you will have to suffer horribly in hell. So the Ratnakar didn't know what all this meant. He didn't know what was sin. He didn't know what was hell or heaven or anything. He had no conception of anything except that he had to get his loot for the day so he could maintain his family. So he said, what is this sin and what is this hell? And Narad Muni explained to him. And then Ratnakar said, but you see, I'm not doing it for a wrong purpose. I'm doing it only to maintain my family. I have my aged parents, I have my wife and I have my children. They are dependent on me. So it is my duty to take care of them. So everyone has a vocation or an occupation in life. And this is my vocation. So I am only capable of doing this. I have no other skills. This is all I have learnt. So Narad Muni said, fine, I accept that you are doing this for your family. And I am sure they must be very grateful for this service that you are doing for them. But if they are receiving the benefit of your stealing and dacoity, then I presume they will also be willing to accept the consequences of that and to share it with you. So Ratnakar said, yes. So Narad Muni said, please go and ask them, are you willing to share my sins? I am performing all these sins for your sake, to maintain you and keep you happy. But I am told it is very sinful and I have to go to hell. So will you share my sins with me and will you come with me to hell after this life? So go and ask them that. Ratnakar said, of course they will agree. But nevertheless, go and ask them. So Ratnakar, he went back immediately to his family members. And he called them for a meeting and they sat down. And he declared, today I met a great saint. And he told me all these things about sin and piety and hell and heaven. And I have come to understand that I was doing something very wrong. But I was doing it only for all of you. So my dear mother and father, I have committed all these sins for you. So will you share this sin with me? And will you also share some time in hell with me? So the mother and father said, my dear son, we have never asked you to take to a life of dacoity. It is your duty as a son to take care of us elder parents. So if you have decided to choose this vocation, you are responsible and you are to blame. We will not come with you to hell and we will certainly not like to share in your sin. Then his heart sank, but he thought, at least my dear wife, she is my companion throughout my life, my better half, at least she will not let me down. So my dear wife, will you at least share my sins with me and come to hell with me? She said, sorry, I also cannot do that. It is your duty to support me as your wife, but I will not come to hell with you. His heart sank even more. He asked his children and he got the same answer. And being extremely despondent, morose upon hearing these replies, he went back to Narad Muni and surrendered to him. He said, oh dear sage, now please instruct me. What can I do for you? How can I save myself? And then of course, for those of you who have grown up in India, you heard this story from childhood, that then Narad Muni asked Ratnakar to chant the name of Lord Ram. But Ratnakar was unable to do it because so great was his stock of sinful activities, it was like a huge mountain, that he was unable to bring out the name of the Lord from his mouth. It's a fact actually. If someone has committed too much of sin, he cannot take to the name of the Lord. He cannot chant the name of the Lord. It's very difficult. One devotee was explaining one time that he went to one man, he was a doctor. And he had a patient who was about to die, an old lady. And he tried to tell her that chant Hare Krishna. And till the very end, she refused stubbornly to chant Hare Krishna. In her last few moments, even though she was so weak and she knew her death was coming, but she just would not or could not chant even one time Hare Krishna. So therefore, Ratnakar, because of his talk of sins, could not chant. But he started chanting the opposite, Mara, which means to kill. And because of chanting Mara, when you chant it continuously, it becomes Ram, Ram, Ram. This is a story we have heard. Now we don't know which Shastra it is from, but this is some story I thought we'll share with you, which every Indian child knows. But whether or not the details of this story are 100% true or not, but the fact is illuminating. It illustrates the power of the holy name of the Lord. But the lesson to be learned here is, keeping aside the accuracy or otherwise of the details of this story, is that Ratnakar became a very serious disciple. He took the instructions of his spiritual master to heart, and he began to chant the name of Lord Ram with great concentration and faith and attention. He had complete faith that just by chanting the name of the Lord, everything would be achieved. This is also what we as devotees hanker to have, isn't it? But he was fortunate that he had it. And so concentrated was his chanting that he did not even notice that the ants were building an ant hill around him. And within a short while, there was a whole ant hill and he was not even visible. In Sanskrit, the word Valmik means ant hill. So therefore he came to be known as Valmiki. Earlier he was Ratnakar. And then eventually he came out of his trance of chanting the holy names. He went on to become a great sage. And of course he is most well known for his having composed the Ramayana. The Valmiki Ramayana is a very, very beautiful text, very poetic, very devotional also. And I would like to just read a few verses, Sanskrit verses, which are also very sweet, which indicate what we are going to hear when we hear Ramayana or when we read Ramayana.
Charitam Raghunathasya Shatkoti Pravistaram Ekaikam Aksharam Punsam Mahapatakanashanam. Charitam Raghunathasya.
So this charita or story of Raghunath, or Raghunath is Lord Ramachandra, asya means of. So this story of Lord Ramachandra, Shat Koti Pravristaram. Shat Koti, Koti means 1 crore or 10 million. Shat Koti means 100 crores, that means 1 billion. So this is expanded, Pravristaram, into a billion shlokas. Valmiki Ramayana as we know it has only 24,000 shlokas. Just like the Srimad Bhagavatam as we know it has 18,000 verses, but in the higher planets the Srimad Bhagavatam is much more elaborate. It is much larger. Similarly, Ramayana here as we know it, as revealed to us through Valmiki Muni, is only 24,000 verses. But in Brahma Loka, it is 1 billion verses, 100 crore verses. So, Shat Koti Pravistaram Ekaika Aksharam Punsam Mahapataka Nashanam. Each and every syllable of this text has the ability to destroy even the greatest of sins. Patakam is sin and Mahapatak means great sins. So, even the greatest of sins can be destroyed when one hears the narrations of Lord Ramachandra. through the Valmiki Ramayana.
Valmiki Girisambhuta Ramambho Nidhisangata Srimad Ramayani Ganga Punati Bhuvanatrayam.
Valmiki Girisambhuta. This is a nice metaphor that is being used, that Valmiki is like a mountain. Rama Ambho Nidhi Sangata. Lord Ram is like a great ocean of water. Ambho means water, Nidhi means ocean. Ramayani, Srimad Ramayani Ganga. And Srimad Ramayan is like the Ganges. So what is the meaning of this? It is that Valmiki Muni is that huge mountain from which the river called Ramayana flows, and it flows into the ocean called Sri Ramachandra. Punati Bhuvanatrayam, and it purifies all the three worlds.
Valmiki Munisinghasya Kavita Vanacharinah Shrinvan Ramakathanadam Konayati Paramgatim.
Valmiki Mune Singhasya. Singha is a lion. Muni means sage. So Valmiki is being addressed here as the lion among sages. Kavita Vanacharinah Shrinvan Ramakathanadam. Now you know that a lion roars. So Valmiki Muni, the lion called Valmiki, is also roaring, Nadam. And what is his roaring? Ramakatha. So his Ramayan is that beautiful roaring of that lion. And Kavita Vanacharinah. Since a lion moves about in the forest, this lion-like Valmiki, the lion amongst the sages, is wandering in the forest of poetry. Konayati paramgatim. So who will not like to absorb his mind in these wonderful descriptions by which one can attain to the ultimate destination of life? And then there is one or two nice verses on Valmiki, which also will explain what a great devotee of the Lord he is, and why it is important for us to hear from personalities like Valmiki rather than from non-devotees.
Kujantam Rama Rameti Madhuram Madhuraksharam Aruhya Kavita Shakham Vande Valmiki Kokilam.
I offer my respectful obeisances unto Valmiki, who is a kokilam. Kokilam means a cuckoo bird. Now a cuckoo bird coos, makes some very pleasant sounds, like we have these parrots here that are always making these sounds over here. So kujantam. So kujantam means this cuckoo-like Valmiki is making these cooing sounds. Ahruya Kavita Shakhan. And this bird, Valmiki Muni, who is like a cuckoo, has climbed onto a branch that is called poetry. Kavita Shakham. Shakha means a branch. Aruhya means to climb up. Aruhya Kavita Shakham. And he is cooing Ram Ram. Ram Ram Eti Madhuram. The very melodious words, Ram 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 Ram. He is cooing these very sweet sounds. Madhura Aksharam. The name of Ram is very sweet. And Valmiki is also reciting with great devotion very sweetly. Ram, 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 Ram.
Yaha Piban Satatam Ramacharitamrita Sagaram.
So this Valmiki Muni is constantly drinking deeply of that nectar of the descriptions of the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra.
Atriptastam munim vande prachetasam akalmasham.
So that sinless Valmiki, akalmasham, is atriptastam, is never sated by hearing the pastimes of Lord Ram. He wants to hear more and more and more about it. So are these not the descriptions of a pure devotee of the Lord, who is never sated by hearing the glorification and pastimes of the Supreme Lord? Indeed, this is the perfection of life. If somehow or other in our hearts, unflinching attraction for the messages and pastimes of the Lord is awakened, then whether we are in this material world or not, we have achieved the perfection of life. Otherwise, all our labors are a waste of time. So we can try to understand the pastimes of the Lord in this spirit. So how is it that Valmiki Muni actually began on this wonderful epic of the Ramayana? So let's begin hearing what the Valmiki Ramayana itself says about how the great work was composed. The Valmiki Ramayana begins with a description of Narad Muni coming to the ashram of Valmiki Muni. By this time, of course, Valmiki Muni was already renowned as a very, very great sage. This was Treta Yuga, when people even ordinarily would live for very, very long spans of time. So Valmiki was by now a very, very experienced sage, very advanced, and he had many disciples with him in his ashram. Narad Muni came there to visit him. It's amazing how Narad Muni is there everywhere. Whenever you think of great devotees, somewhere he's there. In the Bhagavatam, he's everywhere. Ramayana, he's there. Puranas, he's there. Such a great personality, Narad Muni. So when he came there, Valmiki Muni asked him the question, "My dear sage, I am keenly interested to know whether there is an ideal human being existing in this world now who has all the perfect qualities that any human being may want to have, that are desirable in any human being." And then Valmiki Muni went on to cite some of these qualities that he thought were the desirable and ideal qualities in a human being. He listed quite a few qualities. And then Narad Muni replied, "Yes, indeed, there is one by the name of Ram, who is a descendant of King Ikshvaku in the Solar Dynasty, in the Surya Vansha. And he is indeed exactly that man whom you are speaking of." Yes, Lord Ramachandra comes in the Surya Vansha. Even Sita Devi comes in the Solar Dynasty. Krishna, of course, appears in the Moon Dynasty, the Chandra Vansha. In the Srimad Bhagavatam also, we read of the genealogy of Lord Ramachandra. It's interesting sometimes to trace out how the Lord appears in this world and what dynasty he appears. Brahma is, of course, the forefather of everyone in this universe. He has many sons, and one of them is Marichi. Of course, we must distinguish between this sage Marichi, who is a son of Brahma, and the demon Marich, whom Ram shot in. Right? He didn't kill him initially, but he killed him later as the golden deer. This Marichi is different. He's a great sage. So Marichi's son was Kashyap Muni. Kashyap Muni had some wives, and one of them was Aditi. From Aditi and Kashyap Muni came the main demigods, the 12 Adityas. And one among them is the sun god, Vivaswan. Vivaswan's son was Vaivasvata Manu, also called Shraddha Dev. Shraddha Dev had many sons also. Among them there was the great Nriga. We have all heard of Nriga. In the connection of Krishna Leela, you know that he became a lizard because he wrongly, by mistake, gave away a cow twice in charity to the same Brahmana. So that was one of the sons. Another son was Ikshvaku. Another son was Sharyati. Sharyati's descendant, one of the descendants of Sharyati was Revati, who later married Balaram. And another brother of Ikshvaku was Nabhaga, whose grandson was Ambarish Maharaj. So all great souls. So Ikshvaku is the person we are focusing on. Ikshvaku also had several sons. And in one site, we had Nimi, after whom he is in control of our movement of our eyelids. Therefore we say Nimesha, just the time that is required for blinking an eyelid. So in Nimi's line, eventually came Janak Maharaj, but not the father of Sita. Janak was a title for the kings who came in that line. Many, many Janaks were there in that dynasty. And eventually came Shiradhvaja, that Janak Maharaj who was the father of Sita. And from Nimi's brother came another dynasty that went on and had many great kings like Harishchandra, Rohit, and after many descendants, then there was Sagar, Anshuman, Dilip, Bhagirath, who brought Ganga Devi down. And after some descendants, then there was Khatvanga Maharaj, who is famous because he achieved the perfection of life in just one moment. He asked the demigods, how long do I have to live? They said, 1 second. And in that one moment, he made his life perfect. Khatvanga Maharaj's son was Dirghabahu. Dirghabahu's son was Raghu. Raghu is also a famous word, because after the word Raghu comes Raghav. Lord Ram is often called Raghav, or Raghavendra, or Raghuvir, the brave one in the dynasty of Raghu. So then from Raghu came Aja, from Aja came Dasharath, and from Dasharath came Lord Ram. So this is in brief the genealogy of Lord Ram and Srimati Sita Devi. Both came in the solar dynasty. So Narad Muni is explaining to Valmiki Muni that same Ram who has descended in the solar dynasty in the line of King Ikshvaku, he is the foremost amongst all beings, of all human beings. He says human beings because he has appeared in the human society. And he goes on to list 67 divine qualities. Very beautifully he describes them. Time does not permit us to go into such detailed descriptions of each of the qualities of Lord Ram. But being the ideal personality, these are actually objects of study for us. If we can somehow emulate these and aspire that one day we can also try to have a character like Lord Ram, then our life can become perfect. And then he described in brief the whole Ramayana to him. Now it is interesting, we may think of a chronological point here. Because at some point in the narration, Narad Muni changes the tense. Up to a point when Lord Ram returns from Lanka after killing Ravan, Narad Muni uses the past tense to say that this happened, Ram killed this demon, he killed, he did this, he did that. And after his return, he says, the rain shall be like this, it will be like this. So it's some indication of when this conversation took place, chronologically. In other words, the Ramayana was composed by Valmiki Muni at a point in time when some of the events that were described here had already taken place, and some of the events were yet to take place. It's a very interesting point. So Narad Muni, having explained the summary of all the pastimes of the Lord, from the beginning till his disappearance from this world, till his return to the spiritual world, and then he departed. Valmiki Muni was very grateful that the great sage Narad had come and had enlightened him about this. And soon with his disciples led by Bharadwaj in his ashram on the banks of the Tamasa river, he went to take bath one morning. The Tamasa river is somewhere between Varanasi and Allahabad, and it was a very serene atmosphere, an ideal setting for an ashram, full of natural beauty and cooing birds. And he found a place which was free from slippery mud as a descent into the river. He took his bath there, and he was wandering with his disciples, just savoring the beauty of their surroundings. And just at that time, he saw two krauncha birds. The krauncha is a kind of a crane. I do not know exactly what kind of bird this is, but probably some kind of a crane. And these two were in an amorous relationship, staying together for all the time. Just as Valmiki Muni was looking at these two birds, there was a hunter, a Nishad, who seemed very cruel. And he shot an arrow at the male bird, the male krauncha bird. And the arrow pierced the male bird and he fell to the ground. And he was writhing in pain and he was bleeding profusely. And seeing this, his mate, the she-bird, who was sitting up on the branch, began to wail and cry piteously, flapping her wings in great agony. When Valmiki Muni saw this, he was extremely upset. He became very, very disturbed, because sages by nature are very compassionate and they feel for the pain and suffering that is experienced by all living beings, not just human beings. They don't like to hurt even the smallest of living entities. So spontaneously, even without his understanding how it was happening, some words came from Valmiki Muni's mouth. And he uttered a Sanskrit verse. Ma nishad patishtham tvam gamah shashvati samah yat krauncha mithunadekam vadhihi kama mohitam. Now this came in a perfect meter. It was set in a certain pattern. And as soon as Valmiki Muni uttered this, he was surprised at himself. How did I utter these poetic words? It just came out. I had not planned to set these things in a rhyme, but it just came. And immediately he turned around to his disciple Bharadwaj and said, "My dear son, just see what has happened. From my mouth has come these few words, which are set in four quarters, four pad. And each pad or each quarter has eight syllables. Somehow it has symmetrically come. It is like a poetry that has automatically come." All the student, especially the student Bharadwaj, who was hearing this, he immediately committed this verse to memory. And Valmiki Muni was very pleased to see that. And this composition, although it may seem to be something very ordinary, continued to haunt the mind of Valmiki. Because he was thinking, how did this poem suddenly come into my mouth? I never meditated on this point. I never tried to compose this poem. These words in that symmetrical fashion just came. This is actually called the Anushtup Chanda. It is a certain meter of Sanskrit verse in which the whole Ramayana is eventually written. And most of the Bhagavad Gita also is in that meter. Like for example, Dehi no sminyatha, Dehi kaumaram yovanam jara, etc. These smaller verses are all in the Anushtup Chanda. So Valmiki Muni spontaneously came up with this particular meter. And even as he walked back to his ashram from the river, and he was discussing various topics with his students as a guru should, but behind in his own mind he was thinking about this verse. How is this? What is this that has happened here? How did this verse come from my mouth? And just as he was thinking like this, all of a sudden, the creator of the universe, Brahmaji, came there, riding on his swan. And naturally, Valmiki Muni and his disciples were extremely surprised and awestruck. The students of Valmiki Muni became very delighted to see that the creator of the universe had come to give a personal visit to their guru. And Valmiki Muni hurriedly, being wonderstruck, he offered him some seat and he offered him the reception that was required. Having made Brahmaji sit in a nice place and offered him nice words of welcome and some nice things to eat and drink, then he asked Brahmaji what service he could do for him. Brahmaji immediately addressed him and said, "My dear great sage, let this verse that you have composed be for your glorification. Do not be bewildered by this verse. Please know that this verse has emanated from your mouth by my will. Saraswati Devi has personally manifested on your tongue to come out with this verse." Saraswati Devi is the goddess of learning, and she is none other than the wife of Lord Brahma. So therefore, this verse has come out by my will. I wish that you should narrate the pastimes of that ideal and perfect personality, Sri Ramachandra, as you have heard it from Narad Muni. There are many things which you have heard. You must repeat them. But please know that whatever you know about Lord Ramachandra, about his wife Sita Devi, about the Rakshasas and the Asuras he has killed, about his associates the Vanaras, about his father King Dasharatha and so on, all that you know and all that you don't know should also be written there. And as far as all that you don't know, do not worry. It shall all be revealed to you. And I bless you, I benedict you, O great sage, that whatever you compose in this epic, which will be called the Ramayana, will never come false. It will never be untrue. So Brahmaji's benediction was that every word of that Valmiki Ramayana is truth. Even the one that is the prediction for the future. And he said that this Ramayana that you will compose will remain here for many, many years. It will be read and heard by people till as much time as the mountains and the rivers exist upon this earth. And till such time as the Ramayana is heard and sung everywhere, you are free to live anywhere within this universe that I have created, whether on this earth or whether on any higher planets. So please, now you compose this Ramayana, and all glory be to you, and please know that you will achieve the perfection of your life by this activity. And then Brahmaji, having achieved his purpose, he departed from there. Even as Valmiki Muni had been speaking to Brahma, welcoming him, he had been thinking about this verse, of how that verse came from his mouth. So obsessed had his mind become with that, and Brahmaji immediately understood and had given him the answer. And even after Brahmaji's departure, somehow or other, he could not forget. The disciples, of course, were very delighted. And they were eagerly waiting that now our guru is going to compose a great epic narrating the pastimes of Sri Ram. And they were discussing among themselves with great excitement. And Valmiki Muni was thinking that now I should compose this Ramayana in the same meter of the verse that spontaneously came from my mouth by the mercy of Lord Brahma. And then soon after this incident, Valmiki Muni, having taken bath in the Tamasa river, having performed his achaman, sat down on a seat of kusha grass with its ends pointed towards the east. He fixed himself in trance, in meditation, and in that state of meditation, everything was revealed to him by the grace of Brahma. With his eyes closed, meditating upon his inner consciousness, he could see as clearly as anything. Valmiki Muni describes it, saying that as clear as an amla fruit that was in his palm, he could understand the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra. It is said about Brahma also that he understands the universe like a walnut placed in his palm. Similarly, you know, an amla fruit, when it is placed in someone's palm, he can easily see what it is. He can examine it from various angles and see and analyze. Similarly, all the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra, those that had occurred, those that were occurring at the moment, and those that were yet to occur in the future, all were revealed to him. The exile, the banishment of Lord Ram, his going into the forest, the trials and tribulations he faced in the forest, the killing of the demons, the killing of Ravana, the kidnapping of Sita Devi, the reign of Lord Ram to come in the future, everything was understood by him. He could see it crystal clear. This is called revealed scripture. Absolute truth is revealed. It cannot be, one cannot force one's entry into the domain of the absolute truth. It is only mercy by which we can receive higher knowledge. Entrance into the pastimes of the Lord can take place only by higher mercy, by the Supreme Lord's mercy and the mercy of the great devotees of the Lord, and by no other way. All the great scriptures in the world have been composed in this way. That is why Srila Prabhupada calls the scriptures as revealed scriptures. He doesn't just say scriptures, because scripture must be revealed. It cannot be concocted by power of analysis. Another significance of the word revealed scripture is that only a certain amount is revealed. As much as is necessary is revealed. Maybe there is much more which is not revealed. Because after all, the pastimes of the Lord are unlimited, unfathomable. Everything cannot be revealed to the human beings on earth. As I mentioned earlier, in Brahma Loka it is 1 billion verses of the Ramayana. The Bhagavat also has so many more verses. But as much as was necessary by the mercy of Brahmaji, the great devotee of the Lord, it was revealed. And then Valmiki Muni, having composed this most beautiful Ramayana, divided it into 6 parts called the Kandas. Kanda, we know the word Kanda. Jnana Kanda, Upasana Kanda, etc. So Kanda means a part. So this Ramayana of Valmiki, the first part is called the Bala Kanda, which describes the childhood pastimes or the youthful pastimes of Lord Ramachandra up to the point of his actually coming back from his wedding with Srimati Sita Devi, and after defeating Lord Parshuram in battle. After that is the Ayodhya Kanda, in which we hear the heartrending description of the banishment and exile of Lord Ram into the forest. And the Ayodhya Kanda ends with Lord Ram already in the forest. They have gone to Chitrakoot, and from there they have gone to the ashram of Atri Muni and Anasuya Devi. Then they go into the Dandakaranya forest, and there is the Aranyakanda. Aranya means forest. Dandaka Aranya, the forest called Dandaka. Of course, there is another history to that, that can be discussed at the appropriate time in these pastimes. So after the Aranyakanda, from Dandakaranya, the Lord went south, and he came to Kishkindha Kshetra, near Hampi. Many of you may have been to Hampi, where he met Hanuman, Sugriva, and so on. And that part is called the Kishkindha Kanda. So he had a pact of friendship with Hanuman and Sugriva. And in this Prakat Leela, Hanuman is meeting his Lord for the first time. Of course, Hanuman is an eternal associate of the Lord. But in this particular duration of the Lord's pastime on the earth planet, Hanuman is meeting the Lord for the first time. And then after the Kishkindha Kanda, there is the episode of Hanuman jumping over the sea to go to Lanka and creating havoc over there, and then coming back, and that is the Sundar Kanda. After the Sundar Kanda, Hanuman comes back, he gives a message about Sita's well-being, and he has managed to put the fear of God, the fear of Ram, into Ravan, and Lord Ram now prepares to cross over the ocean, and then the battle takes place in Lanka, and that is the Yuddha Kanda. So six Kandas. And finally there is the epilogue, Uttarakanda. So in this way Valmiki Muni has nicely devised the whole Ramayana in flowing very beautiful verses. And these verses can be set to music and played by musical instruments. So now, having composed this great epic poem, Valmiki Muni was thinking, who are the ones who can memorize it? Who is so powerful that can memorize this whole 24,000 verse Ramayana and recite it to music? So the qualifications of the person who would be required to recite the Ramayana was awesome. First of all, he had to memorize 24,000 verses. Then he had to be an expert singer. He had to know the subtleties and the nuances of singing and of playing musical instruments. He had to have a nice voice. He had to have a very pleasing personality and appear very pleasing also to see, to look at. And as Valmiki Muni was thinking about who this candidate could be, two young boys, lads, came in front of him. They were very, very beautiful to look at. And of course, Valmiki Muni was familiar with them, because he had brought them up from childhood in his ashram. And they were none other than the sons of Lord Ram, Lav and Kush. At this time, of course, we can understand therefore that Lord Ram had already banished Sita again. First time she had voluntarily come with him, although Lord Ram didn't want her to come. But this time, he had to himself order her, or rather he ordered Lakshman to take her out. And it was very, very heartbreaking for Lakshman. And he vowed at that time that in the next incarnation he would come as the older brother. Enough of listening to the orders of the older brother this life, this incarnation. How can I do something like taking Sita Devi, who is purity personified, who is innocence personified, she has no fault, completely faultless, and yet my older brother is asking me to take her and exile her again. But because he was bound by his devotion for Ram and his sense of duty to the king and his older brother, who is like a father, so he was forced to do it, but he was in a great dilemma, in great torment. And so indeed, in the next time, he came as the older brother Balaram. And Ram came, of course, as Krishna. So then, Lakshman took Sita Devi, who was at that time expecting. She was pregnant. He took her to Valmiki Muni's ashram. She delivered twins, Lava and Kush. They were they were born and brought up in the most serene surroundings of Valmiki Muni's ashram. He took care of them. He trained them nicely. And these two young boys, although they had grown up in a hermitage, but because they were the sons of Lord Ram, who was a Kshatriya, so they also looked very much like Kshatriya princesses, but they had worn the dresses, the dress of a hermit, with their hair tied in matted locks, wearing deer skin, and so on. When they appeared before Valmiki Muni, the Muni understood, yes, if at all anyone can memorize the whole Ramayana and recite it all over the world, then it is these two. So then, the two boys memorized the whole Ramayana and they went everywhere reciting it. They began with their own ashram. They were gifted with Gandharva Vidya also. Gandharva Vidya means the musical arts. Their singing was exquisite like the Gandharvas from the Gandharva Loka. They knew the science of music very well. And the composition was such that it could be sung according to several musical instruments. It could be sung at several speeds, slow, medium and fast. And they were expert in the notes. All the seven notes could be used. Sa, re, ga, ma, pa, dha, ni, etc. All this thing could be used. They were expert in the art of melody, knowing exactly the what pitch, what note, what melody, everything. So having found the perfect reciters, Valmiki Muni was now satisfied. And he urged them to recite it. And when they first recited, many sages assembled. And they were overwhelmed by the wonderful narrations of these two boys, Lava and Kush. This narration was also full of the nine rasas. Nine rasas means all the different emotions that take place. For example, Shringa, that means love. Hasya, that means laughter. Bhayanak, that means terror. Veera, that means chivalry, and so on. There are many such mellows. And they were perfectly conveying the mellow or the mood of the particular episode or incident that they were narrating at a particular time. So all the sages were completely driven to tears. And they were just wrapped in attention. And after the recitation was over, they glorified the two boys and each of them gave them gifts. But of course, what could the sages in the forest gift? So one sage offered a thread with which to tie sticks of wood. Another offered a copian cloth. Another offered a tree bark. Another offered a sacred thread. Like this, these were the gifts in the forest. What else can you give in the forest? And very gratefully, the two boys accepted them and they were very encouraged by the appreciation of the sages, and even more with deeper emotion they began to sing this Ramayana. One day when they were walking in the streets of Ayodhya and singing Ramayana, Lord Ram himself happened to see them. He didn't know that they were his own sons. They were wearing the dress of hermits. And he called them in to his assembly hall and urged them to sing. And Lord Ram called his brothers, Bharat, Shatrughna, Lakshman, please come. Just hear these wonderful narrations from these two boys. Although they are wearing the clothes of hermits, they look like hermits, but actually I can understand that they are Kshatriyas. But nevertheless, they are singing very, very beautifully. So then Love and Kush began reciting the Ramayana in the assembly hall of Lord Ramachandra. Ramachandra personally came there. He sat in rapt attention. And as the entire assembly present there was hearing, they were all transported into a different world. As Love and Kush, in their musical way, with the musical accompaniment, narrated the various pastimes in the Ramayana. And they began with a description of the city of Ayodhya. And went on and on to describe in so many thousands of verses all that took place and all that was to take place. So in our next 3 days, when we have the narration of the Ramayana, we will not go sequentially right through the Valmiki Ramayana because it is too vast. So rather what we can do is to just take certain themes and point out, and with incidents from the various at different parts of the Ramayana we can illustrate those themes. The Valmiki Ramayana has so many wonderful narrations that also appear in other Puranas. But here we find them described in very great detail. For example, the appearance of Mother Ganga in this world. Jai Vijay Prabhu has shown us this nice movie about the appearance of Ganga. You also mentioned in the passing the story of appearance of Ganga in the Ramayana. It's in much more detail than it is in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So like this, there are many, many nice narrations directly pertaining to the pastimes of the Lord and some pertaining to the pastimes of great sages and saints. So we will try over the next few days to take some glimpse into this great magnum opus, epic of Valmiki, the Valmiki Ramayana. So we will stop here for today. If there is any question or comment, we have a few minutes left. Yes, tell me. It was later, I believe. It is not exactly mentioned in the Valmiki Ramayana. Yes. Yes. But because at that time they were brought up incognito, even Lord Ram did not know that they are his sons. They were just brought up in the ashram of Valmiki Muni. And Mother Sita, by that time, unable to bear the grief of separation from Lord Ram, had already requested Mother Earth to accept her. And Mother Earth had opened up and accepted Mother Sita Devi there. So, it is not exactly clearly mentioned in the Valmiki Ramayana, the beginning. So we will have to see. But it appears that they were not so much aware. The question is on Tulsidas's Ramayana, the Ramcharitmanas. Yes, it is in fact a very, very popular composition. In fact, in northern India, it is a Tulsi Ramayana that is more popular than the Valmiki Ramayana. Prabhupada has said different things on different occasions. While Prabhupada has consistently emphasized that the original and most authoritative Ramayana is Valmiki's Ramayana, so that much is very clear for us. He has cautioned us about others for various reasons. He has not explicitly in any way condemned the Tulsi Ramayana as such, except for one or two hints in that direction. But we can understand that Tulsi Ramayana is also a very devotional work. It is certainly very devotional. There is no doubt about it. There was one ISKCON devotee who was doing his PhD on Tulsi Ramayana in America. And I heard that he said that Tulsi Ramayana also, there was nothing that he found objectionable as such from the Siddhanta point of view, except maybe at one point where there seemed to be some trace of Mayavad, which he was not, it was not like a certain thing, it was just some cloud or some hint of a possibility. But as such, apart from that, he did not find it opposed to the principles of pure bhakti. Nevertheless, because it is not officially recommended by the acharyas in our line, we do not so much promote that book. We may respect it, and we may respect the author also, and we may respect those who are reciting and following it also. But because it is not promoted, so we don't give so much emphasis to that. Yes. Jai Vijay Prabhu. Lord Vishnu. So Jai Vijay Prabhu is making a comment that one reason, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur explained that one reason why we don't give so much emphasis to Tulasi Ramayana is because Tulasidas comes in the line of Bhrigu Muni, and Bhrigu Muni was the one who offended Lord Vishnu, as you know in the story. He went and kicked the chest of Lord Vishnu. Any other question? Yes. The question is, how was Ratnakar able to concentrate so much on the holy name when he was so sinful? Of course, he was sinful in this life, but you must remember also these are all very exalted personalities who have some intimate connection with the Lord also. There was obviously some intense sukriti also somewhere. But above all, even if you don't consider the past, we can understand that simply by having great faith in the instructions of the great devotees, one can achieve that determination. Ratnakar's great qualification was, when Narad Muni told him to chant, he accepted that with his heart fully, without any trace of doubt. That was his qualification, because of which he was able to chant. A doubtful heart cannot chant purely. Only a faithful heart can chant. Only a surrendered heart can chant purely. Yes. Yes, we have heard this from childhood. The question is about Love and Kush having an encounter with Lord Ram, when during the Ashwamedha Yajna the horse is let loose, and then Lav and Kush capture the horse and they defeat Lakshman. Eventually Ram has to come. So that's the time they actually get to know each other. That's to answer your question. I remember now from my childhood, this coming to my mind now. So that's the time, but I do not recall seeing or reading this in the Valmiki Ramayana. Perhaps somebody else can add anything. It is not, maybe in some other Quran. Yes. Well, as I mentioned, from the narration that appears in the Valmiki Ramayana, the point when Narad Muni spoke to Valmiki and Valmiki actually composed it was somewhere when Ram was already present. So it happened after some point in time. So Ram was still on the planet. He had performed some pastimes, but he still had many years to go. Narad Muni describes up to the point that Lord Ram returned from Lanka to Ayodhya. He describes in the past tense. And then he says, Lord Ram will rule now in the future for 11,000 years. And his reign will be like this, the people will be happy, this will happen and that will happen. Yes. The question is that in the solar dynasty, there are many great kings like Ikshvaku and Bhagirath and so on. So why is it called Raghu Vansh? Why not after the other kings? Sometimes it is. Like Krishna's dynasty is sometimes called the Yadu Vansh. Although Yadu was also one of the kings in the line. So similarly, because Raghu was also an exceptional king. So Raghu is glorified because his name is now connected to Lord Ram. So it is his great fortune. He must have been a great devotee. Sometimes in the Ramayana and elsewhere you find Lord Ram is referred to in various ways. Sometimes he is called Kakutstha. That is also one of the sign of Kakutstha. Kakutstha. Kakutstha was one king who was an ancestor of Lord Ram. So many times in the Valmiki Ramayana you will see Lord Ram being addressed as Kakutstha, one who is a descendant of Kakutstha, who was a great warrior, and he, Kakut means the hump of a bull, Stha means thit. So he fought against the Asuras on behalf of the demigods sitting on the hump of that bull, and he fought. His name was Kakutstha. So he's a descendant. So many times Lord Ram is referred to as a descendant of many of the other kings in the solar dynasty also. And it is said in the Bhagavatam that the last king in the solar dynasty has died. Now the solar dynasty is not there. But one of the kings in the intermediate point, his name was Maru. He was a great yogi. And he is still alive, the Bhagavatam says. And he is living in a village called Kalapagram. And when the Kali Yuga is over, he will revive the Surya Vansha, the solar dynasty. Once again from the Satyuga, it will start. So the solar dynasty will begin again at the proper time. Now there are no real Kshatriyas, so no question of solar or lunar dynasties. Yes, Mataji. Whose expansions were Love and Kusha? Well, it is not mentioned in the Valmiki Ramayana or in the Srimad Bhagavatam that they were expansions of anybody, except that they were sons of Lord Ram. That is mentioned. But about their category, it is not explained. We understand that the four brothers, Ram, Lakshman, Bharat and Shatrughna, were Vishnu Tattva. But that's all. But there is nothing about Love and Kush that we can speculate about. Yeah. Yes, yes. Yes, and he divided the world amongst them. As I said at the beginning of the lecture, that the one part was called Kushadweep, which includes present-day Africa, came under the administration of Kush, and this part became Lava. Yes. Who comes later is actually the older one in twins. When twins are born, the one who comes out less second, although he's born 1 second later, but actually he is the older one. Okay, so it is almost 7. Yes, one last question. The question is about whether there are many different varieties of Valmiki Ramayans. Well, there may be differences in the narration, but original texts, I think there are a few standard versions available which are common everywhere. The differences will mostly be in the translation or in the narrative. When people just like Rajagopalacharyas were mentioning, they write their own understanding of the Ramayana from the Valmiki, original Valmiki. But the texts are more or less standard. Okay, so thank you very much. We will stop here. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Valmiki Ramayana ki jai, Sri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Sri Sri Krishna Balaram ki jai, Radha Shyam Sundar ki jai, Gaur Premanande.